From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Well, I hope all of you out there had a great Thanksgiving, a day full of food, faith, and football, I hope. Hope all your good your teams won. I know that's not possible, but with all the listeners around the country, but I hope it was a good day anyway. So excited today to talk to Raymond Arroyo. He's a host on EWTN. You know him from the world over. He's got a brand new Christmas album coming out. We'll be talking to him a little bit about the miracle of Christmas and also about this new album called Merry and Bright. He's quite a talented singer. I've seen him perform on YouTube and otherwise. And yeah, it's looking forward to this album getting some traction. It's called Merry and Bright, so check that one out, and we'll look forward to chatting with Raymond later in the program about miracles and music. And we'll also be talking about Our Lady of Guadalupe. People who know me know that my all-time favorite Marian apparition, Marian title, is Our Lady of Guadalupe. And there's a brand new book that takes a very interesting approach to sort of the backstory to Our Lady of Guadalupe, and it's called Guadalupe and the Flower World Prophecy. We'll be joined today by Joseph Julian Gonzalez and Monique Gonzalez, the authors of this fascinating new book. And of course, those apparitions happened almost 500 years ago. 1531 were the apparitions to St. Juan Diego. And they're presenting some new perspectives of this centuries-old apparition, which I think is absolutely fascinating. So we'll be excited to talk to Joseph and Monique later in the program. And check out my program, They Might Be Saints, which airs every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And on this week's upcoming week's show on December 6th, we have They Might Be Saints, the Martyrs of La Florida. And we'll be looking at the extraordinary faith of the Spanish priests and Appalachian natives that were killed while evangelizing and defending their Catholic faith in La Florida. And check out Explore with the Miracle Hunter. We're talking about Our Lady of Guadalupe on this program, and I've got a program that's coming up related to the most visited Marian shrine in the world, which is Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico. And I'll be there to investigate how the miraculous image emblazoned on St. Juan Diego's tilma has inspired millions of believers. So check that one out tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN television. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project like we always do. Believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion that lines up to every day of the calendar year. And for today, November 25th, we've got Our Lady of the Rock from Fiesole in Italy in the year 1446. And the might-be saint of the day is Blessed Elizabeth Ochsler from Germany, who lived from 1386 to 1420. And the question of the week, it's an interesting one. Does the Virgin Mary only appear to Catholics? I'll see what I can do to answer that one in just a little bit. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening all around on the world and those things that relate to miracles. For people who want to keep up to date on what I'm reporting, you can go to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter, or you can go to my Instagram page where I have 25,000 followers. You can join the fun. And we try to post miracle stories that are happening each and every day. And so the story that's coming down to us today is that there is a Virgin Mary statue in Mexico that has started crying with, quote, real tears rolling down her cheeks, end quote. So this statue was spotted shedding real tears, and people are now flocking to witness this, quote-unquote, miracle from many miles away, going there on special pilgrimages. And churchgoers in Mexico have apparently witnessed the statue of the Virgin Mary shedding tears. Of course, the church has not yet investigated, so we don't really know. And the alleged miracle is said to have happened at a church in El Canal in the state of Colima. And following reports of the incident, hundreds of curious people, believers and skeptics, have made their way to this place to see for themselves. And footage taken and uploaded to social media showed what looks like small drops of tears or transparent liquid falling from the eyes of Mary. You can see that if you go to the Facebook page of the Miracle Hunter. I have that article posted. Others in the area have associated the Virgin Mary's tears with violence going on in Colima. We always ask the question, why the tears of Mary? There are very rarely messages associated with a weeping statue. And so why? And so there's people talking about it corresponding to the ongoing violence in Colima. And one of the witnesses there, this man named Victor Ramos, he said we can associate with the violence rates that are being experienced here in the state of Colima and here in the community, end quote. And just by numbers, at least 702 confirmed intentional homicides have been recorded by the Colima's prosecutor's office up to October of this year. And Maria Mercedes Hernandez, a visitor, she said that she hoped that the Virgin would provide a return to peace for Colima as well as the rest of the world. There are numerous people who are talking about this, including this Professor Luigi Garlaschelli, and he says that some statues are able to absorb water due to their porous material. And so he is saying that perhaps there's a small scratch that happened to the protective glaze and allowed water to fall in. So he's a skeptic in this situation. Currently, the Catholic Church has not yet investigated it. So if we find out more about this and perhaps find out if it is a true miracle, perhaps true tears coming from that statue would solve that or establish that. But we'll find out when the Church, if and when the Church investigates. And for more information on this story or any of the other miracle news stories happening around the world, connect to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that gets the right answer. The prize that I give out is the Miracle Hunter image of the faces of Mary. And people who write in the fastest with the right answer will win that prize. Answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. The question from last week related to sacramentals. We spoke with the author of the book of Compendium of Sacramentals last week, so we thought that was appropriate. And so the question was, according to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, what are the three types of sacramentals? One is blessings, the second is consecrations / dedications, and the third is exorcisms. So if you sent in that right answer, you'll win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary. Now, the question for this week, we're talking about Our Lady of Guadalupe and the Flower World Prophecy. And the question for this week is, how many popes have visited the Guadalupe image in Mexico? Again, that question is, how many popes have visited the Guadalupe image in Mexico? And if you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to MiracleHunter@EWTN.com or questions@MiracleHunter.com, and maybe we'll be sending you out the prize if you're the fastest. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about the miracle of Christmas with Raymond Arroyo and his brand new album, Merry and Bright. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show know that we talk exclusively about miracles, and when we talk about miracles, perhaps there's no greater time of year than the Christmas season to be looking at the miracles in our own life and the miracle of Christmas in general. Well, we're so excited today to be joined by a friend of the program, and of course you all know him. Everybody who watches EWTN knows Raymond Arroyo. You know him for his cutting interviews on World Over, but did you know that he also, in addition to being an author of numerous books, is also a great singer in his own right. And so he's got a brand new CD that's coming out, or audio coming out, called Merry and Bright, that goes through some of the Christmas classics just in time to celebrate the miracle of Christmas indeed. So welcome back to the program, Raymond Arroyo.
Hey, Michael, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's always great to chat. And you know, I
for, you know, for years, I've of course watched world over, and I've seen your great interviews, and I know you write the various books, and you're a multi-talented guy in a way that I didn't know about until maybe last year. I saw a YouTube clip of you singing with Aaron Neville, and to be honest, when I pulled that up, I was expecting to say, you know, here's Raymond trying something else, but it's beyond trying. You've got a beautiful voice, and your brand new record or CD or audio file coming out is Merry and Bright, available through Sophia Institute Press. I'm excited to see that all the Christmas classics are on this one, just in time to celebrate this miracle of Christmas. So I'm just going to cue you up, Michael, out of the...
Look, like you, a record producer had watched the Christmas specials over the year and seen me singing with Aaron Neville and Johnny Mathis and Andy Williams, and said, would you consider doing a Christmas album? And I said, no, I will not consider doing a Christmas album, because 25 years ago, Michael, I sang, you know, I was in musicals, I was trained as an actor, but singing in a musical on stage is very different from recording an LP and recording with a band. And I knew that because I'd hung around enough artists and knew them, you know, and been in recording studios. I knew what it took. So I said, I'm not sure if I should wade into these waters. And it had been a long time. Look, 25 years is a long time. But she kind of pressed me and came back and said, well, what if we did original arrangements? I said, well, it would have to be original arrangements, or I wouldn't do it. So we got Kevin Koska, who did The Greatest Showman, and he orchestrated The Lion King and Jungle Book, all those great films, Dark Knight, incredible films particularly, and movie musicals. But his background is really in big band orchestrations. So Kevin Koska did new arrangements for the album. We got a 20-piece orchestra in New Orleans of guys who've been playing together for like 20 and 30 years and assembled them. And I went back to vocal training and lessons, which is something I hadn't done in a long time. But you know what? It's a little like riding a bike. You really don't forget, but you do lose touch with it. You know, it's different muscles. I mean, you're using your back, you're using your breathing. I mean, it's about pitch and tone and where are you placing it and all of those things. So you really did have to, I had to go back and sort of retrain. And it's been good. And I've remained I go every week because we're doing a tour in December, you know, late November into December. We're going to Arizona and Cleveland, Tampa, Florida. And we end the tour in Nashville, Tennessee, at the Ryman Auditorium, and Dallas in the middle, Dallas, Texas. So
amazing.
For
a guy who travels all the time, that's adding more fun to your travel schedule.
Well, I've kind of cleared the decks for December because I wanted to dedicate, you know, myself to this. And it's an important, for me, this is an important project because, you know, when we started Christmas Merry and Bright, I wanted to make sure that we were reinserting and re-energizing, if you will, so many of these Christmas carols that, in my estimation, have been leached of their thrill, of their power, of their excitement and drama, probably because we've heard them so often and for so long. But when you go back, as I did, and you read the lyrics again, and I laid the lyrics out without the music, just reading the lyrics, and then I did a background search and did a deep dive on all of these songs. And when I discovered the origin stories of each of these songs, why they were written, the context they were written, I realized we have often heard these in the wrong setting or pitched in the wrong way. Hmm. So in an effort to rectify that, we decided to go forward with the project. So Christmas Merry and Bright is my attempt and the band's attempt and Kevin Koska's attempt to sort of give new life to these songs that you may have taken for granted or you thought you understood, perhaps you didn't. And, and it was such an amazing journey for me. And some of them are very tender. Some of them are raucous. And you know, what does the gospel say? Sing a new song to the Lord. Sing a joyful noise to the Lord. There's a lot of that going on here as well. So it's a nice balance. And Jose Feliciano joined me. For the first time, Jose agreed to do a new orchestration of Feliz Navidad. Wow. That is sort of tender, a bossa nova treatment at the beginning, that then builds to a familiar kind of celebratory payoff. But it was more in keeping with what he had in mind when he wrote the song. so, which I discovered through interviewing him and his wife and talking to some people who were around at the time the song was written.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Raymond Arroyo about his brand new release, Merry and Bright, a CD of numerous Christmas classics and favorites, all presented in Raymond Arroyo's light. So this is wonderful that you're taking on this new project that's coming out here at the end of November into December, just in time for Christmas. And we always talk about Christmas being a time of miracles. How is this new recording kind of dovetailed with that understanding
of
Christmas?
Christmas, Merry and Bright the entirety of it is a miracle to me, because it's not something I had thought about doing. It's not something I said, oh, you know, I got to go record now. I really didn't. It was not something on my hit punched card. But I have to say, when I got into the movement of it, once I started doing the research and saw the music coming in, and when the band started assembling, and as I put the, you know, orchestrations together. And then once we got into studio, we recorded this in a little theater in New Orleans, Le Petit, which is right in the middle of the French Quarter, literally next to the cathedral in New Orleans, if anybody's been downtown. But when you get in a room with the band, when you've got 20 guys there, suddenly everything starts to shift, and you realize whatever you had planned goes out the window, because it's really, I equate it to like surfing, Michael. It's you know the general direction you're going, but how you'll get there is anybody's guess. So you kind of get on your board and you have to ride the music that they're providing to you, and it changes everything. It changes the phrasing, it changes the tonality, it changes the drama of the song. So those surprises, that was a miracle to me. You know, inspiration, you know, the term inspiration comes from breath, you know, breath drawn in, breath, God breathing breath into us. And I thought as I was singing through some of this, there were things we did, there were moments that were captured that we never anticipated, that I never planned. That was just inspired. And it was all of us together. Sort of riding this wave of music. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful, incredible thing. And I love that we were able to record live with the band in the room. So, we did retakes and, you know, portions of the songs that we retook when there was, you know, a horn was off or I was off. But there is a real energy in the room that's captured that you don't get, I think, when you do a punch edit and you record a vocal later. It's just not the same. So, but the miracle, you asked about miracles. One of the greatest.
I always do.
You'll love this. The moment I knew I was doing this Christmas, Merry and Bright, by the way, everybody can go to RaymondArroyoChristmas.com. RaymondArroyoChristmas.com. There's a trailer video there. You'll see the whole band and Jose and myself, and also tour dates, and you can buy the album there as well. It'll send you to all the vendors. But the amazing thing, when I asked Jose Feliciano to come aboard with this, and I'll ruin this a little bit for you, spoiler alert for your audience. When Jose wrote Feliz Navidad, he wrote it about he and his brothers celebrating Christmas on the beaches in Puerto Rico. And he said, I envisioned them, you know, beating on instruments, and we were singing old Spanish Christmas carols. That's the way I saw it when I wrote the song. So when I said, well, Jose, you know, Puerto Rico is not exactly chilly at Christmas time. I said, what if we did a kind of very gentle bossa nova intro to Feliz Navidad? And you just accompanied me on guitar, and we brought the pieces in as we went along. And he agreed to that. And what we got was sort of this amazing family reunion feel, which I can't even describe. You have to go listen to it, and you'll see what I mean. But it captured that. We captured that moment. And it was a miracle that it happened for this reason. Jose had a gig in the Dominican Republic the night before we had set, you know, to record. His plane, I sent my producer to pick him up. He is not there for the pickup, because his flight is delayed by 14 hours. He finally gets in the wee hours of the morning, the day we're to record. All of his bags have been lost. There's only one bag on the carousel. It's his guitar. That's the only thing that made it. And that is the guitar you'll hear on this cut. It's literally all the man had. He had no clothes. He had no toothbrush. All he had was the guitar. He brought that into the session a few hours later, and you'll hear what we created. So, you know, I always say whenever you're doing something really good, you can bet the enemy will challenge it and try to block it. But inevitably, the silver lining emerges, and you just sort of have to stay at it. I threw my back out, by the way. I had two herniated discs a week before the recording, and I contemplated canceling it. But I figured, you know what? There's too many people involved. There's too much, you know, energy that's already been expended here. I have to do this. So I did whatever it was, 3 hours on my feet, full days. And we got through it, and it sounds pretty good. I'm happy with how it turned out. So all of that is a miracle, Michael, all of it.
There you go. We're talking today with Raymond Arroyo about his brand new Christmas album, Merry and Bright.
Merry and Bright, Michael.
Christmas Merry and Bright.
Yeah, if they go search Merry and Bright, they might find a Hallmark movie. So Christmas Merry and Bright.
Christmas Merry and Bright from Raymond Arroyo, featuring 13 songs, just in time for Christmas. Well, we're so grateful to you, Raymond, for joining us in today's program. And for people who want to pick this one up and hear your voice lent towards singing these great Christmas carols and songs, where do people go to find out more information to pick this up?
Well, they can go to RaymondArroyoChristmas.com. RaymondArroyoChristmas.com, and that has all the vendors, my tour dates coming up starting at the end of November, Thanksgiving weekend in Phoenix, and then we're on to Texas and Tampa and Cleveland, Ohio, and then we end at the Ryman Auditorium. You know, when I lived in Birmingham, all the ladies called me Ryman, so now I'm Ryman at the Ryman, and that's on the 21st of December at the Ryman Auditorium. And by the way, Jose Feliciano is joining me for a few of those dates. Frankie Avalon's going to be with me in Cleveland. So it's going to, and we've got surprise guests that I can't mention, but a lot of audience participation, comedy, there's fun, and the music and the band. So we'll have a great time. So I hope you'll bring your family.
Wonderful. So we're so grateful to you, Raymond Arroyo, for joining us today, talking to us about Christmas Merry and Bright, the new audio offering for Christmas this year. Pick this one up and enjoy the vocal stylings of Raymond Arroyo. Thank you so much, Raymond, for joining
us
on today's
program. Thank
you, Michael.
What a joy. Thank you. Always a pleasure to be with you.
God bless. That was Raymond Arroyo. Check that one out, Christmas Merry and Bright, RaymondArroyoChristmas.com, for more information out from Sophia Institute Press. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love answering questions in Q&A sessions after I give talks. I travel around the country perhaps 20 times. I go to a different parish or shrine or conference and give a talk about miracles. These days I'm speaking a lot about Eucharistic miracles since we're in the middle of the Eucharistic revival, and I always answer questions for 15, 20, 30 minutes afterwards. People have a lot of questions about those strange and mysterious things happening in the history of the world, and I do my best to answer them. We have an interesting question today that was emailed in. The question is, Dear Miracle Hunter, does the Virgin Mary only show herself to Catholics in her apparitions throughout history? Thank you, Sean. Well, thanks, Sean, for your great question. And it's an interesting one, right? I think that we have this idea that perhaps maybe Mary only appears to Catholics, and that's generally true. If we consider what the famous places of Mary visiting, we look through Europe, and that's where all the various basilicas and shrines and markers of Marian apparitions. If you look at that map that I helped put together for National Geographic in 2015 and the most powerful woman in the world, we used all my Miracle Hunter data to map that out. And if you look at that, you'll see that there's a heavy concentration of miracles happening in Europe, especially related to the Virgin Mary. And so we say, well, you know, that seems like it's those are mostly Catholic of visionaries in those cases. And there's a few very rare cases where Mary has appeared to other people who aren't Catholic. The atheist Jew, Alphonse Ratisbonne, who received visions of the Virgin Mary in Rome when he was traveling. And that's that great story of the miraculous medal, where Alphonse had put on a miraculous medal at the request of his friend, the Baron. And as he was looking for his friend in the church, he didn't find his friend, but he found the Virgin Mary, who appeared to him. And Alphonse had this incredible conversion, and he became a priest and started an order for the conversion of the Jews. And that's one of very rare examples of we see that. And then we have a case like Zaytun in Egypt in 1968 to 1971. The Virgin Mary was seen walking in light on the top of St. Mark's Coptic Orthodox Church in Egypt. And that was witnessed by Christians, Jews, atheists, Muslims. Everybody saw her in this case, one of the strangest and most unique cases of Marian apparitions in history. So there are these very rare occasions where Mary does appear to non-Catholics. But by and large, you look at Spain, France, and Italy as the three top places, and the visionaries tend to be Catholic. Not always the most practicing Catholics, like at La Salette, for example, the children there weren't necessarily deeply devout, but we see Mary appearing to Catholics, who I suppose have the best chance of understanding what an apparition of Mary might be, given their background in Catholicism. So thank you, Sean, for your great question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we talk about the Marian devotion of the day. Believe it or not, for every day of the calendar year, there's a different Marian devotion that lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th, but there's actually a different Marian feast day, or a commemoration of a miracle, or the building of a basilica, or some other reason to celebrate Mary on every single day of the calendar year. So for today's date, we have the 365 Days with Mary, November 25th, Our Lady of the Rock from Fiesole in Italy in the year 1446. So according to tradition, twin shepherdess from Fiesole brought the sheep in and every day stopped to pray by a small cavern carved out in a rock with a statue of Mary and Jesus with two angels. On the feast day of the Visitation, they experienced a vision of the Virgin Mary holding the infant Jesus in her arms, appearing to them in a cloud. And she comforted them and asked for a church to be built in her honor, to be started by their father. They left guarding their flock and brought their father to that place, and the Virgin appeared to him as well and made the request again. The villagers were then able to see the vision of the Mother God themselves, and the ecclesiastical authorities approved the construction of a sanctuary dedicated to Our Lady of the Rock, and her feast day is celebrated annually on November 25th. And that is Our Lady of the Rock from Fiesole in Italy in 1446. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book, or you can download the app that's available for free on the iOS App Store. It's called 365 Days with Mary. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We talk a lot about They Might Be Saints, which is my show, which airs every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. We talk about from miracle workers to martyrs to those ordinary people living extraordinary lives of heroic virtue. These are the people that make us wonder if someday they might be saints. And so we always try to keep you up to date on the canonization news, trying to figure out what saints are on their way or in process. And so just this week, coming out of the USCCB's meeting, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops specifically, they announced a new cause for canonization that has been approved by the bishops, meaning that it is ready to get started. Not saying it's near its end. But there's a discussion of Isaac Hecker, who is the most well-known for founding the missionary priests of St. Paul the Apostle, commonly known as the Paulists. And during their November plenary assembly, the bishops of the United States gave their approval to pursuing a cause for canonization for Father Isaac Hecker. And this approval means that the bishops support the cause and encourage the organizers to continue researching his life. And according to the press release, quote, Hecker continues to provide an inspirational model for our contemporaries to think about the search for God, the experience of conversion, the giving of oneself heroically in service, the furthering of the church's mission, and attentiveness to the direction of the Holy Spirit, end quote. And so his cause for canonization was originally opened in the Archdiocese of New York in 2008. This first stage involves a first in-depth review of his life to determine if he lived a life of quote-unquote heroic virtue. And as a young adult, Hecker struggled with God's plan for his life. He tried to search for his place in the world. He turned to the philosophy and studied people like Hegel and Kant. And then later, he started to have some visions. And he wrote about one such heavenly vision that's changed his life. He said, "I cannot say if it was a beautiful, angelic, pure being and myself standing alongside her, feeling a most heavenly, pure joy. And if it was our bodies were luminous and they gave forth a moon-like light, which I felt sprang from the joy of what we experienced." And so is that a vision of the Virgin Mary or an angel or something or a dream? We don't really know what that is. But Hecker was later baptized in the Catholic Church in 1844, and he was ordained a priest with the Redemptorists, and he felt God's call to found the missionary priests of the St. Paul the Apostle, known as the Paulists. So that's the breakdown on the life of Father Isaac Hecker. His canonization cause is now fully approved and underway through the USCCB. So we'll report more about the next stages. It takes a long time, I'm sure, for him to move to that first stage of Venerable, where they look at his life of heroic virtue. And let's take a look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. We do this every week where we talk about the saints from all over the world whose death anniversary or feast day lines up exactly to the day's date. For today, November 25th, we've got Blessed Elizabeth Ockler, who lived from 1386 to 1420 in Germany. And she was born on November 25th, 1386, at Waldsee in Württemberg in Swabia in Germany. And she was born poor, the daughter of John and Anne Ackler, and she was a Franciscan tertiary at the age of 14. And she found it hard to lead a religious life while living with her parents. So at the age of 17, she joined four other tertiaries in a community in Rüth in Germany, and she lived there the rest of her life. And for most of her life, she was subject to ecstasies, received visions of hell, heaven, hell, and purgatory. And she was a stigmatic whose wounds hurt constantly, which bled on Fridays during Lent. And she had the gift of inedia, which is, accompanies a lot of stigmatics, I think, eating nothing but the Eucharist for long periods. And she died on November 25th in 1420 at Rüth, Germany, of natural causes, buried in the church at Rüth. And she was beatified by Pope Clement XIII in 1766. And her feast day is today, November 25th. And it turns out her birthday and her death day are on the exact same day, so that makes sense that they chose that day. With one more miracle, we'll see Blessed Elizabeth Ockler referred to as Saint Elizabeth. So we'll let you know if and when that happens. And for those people who want to tune into my television show, They Might Be Saints, they can tune in this week and every week at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. For this week, we've got They Might Be Saints, The Martyrs of La Florida. And we talk about the extraordinary faith of the Spanish priests and Appalachian natives who were killed by evangelizing and defending their Catholic faith in La Florida. So check that one out. TheyMightBeSaints.com is the website, or pick up the book, They Might Be Saints, available from EWTNRC.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Joseph Julian Gonzalez and Monique Gonzalez about their brand new book, Guadalupe and the Flower World Prophecy. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show know that I love talking about apparitions of the Virgin Mary. And I often get the question, which one is your favorite or what is your strongest devotion? I always mention Our Lady of Guadalupe. I think my mother passed on that devotion that I have to Our Lady of Guadalupe. I've been to the Basilica there numerous times and spoken with various Guadalupe experts from around the world. So it's always going to be number one for me with my devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe. And there's a brand new book that's out from Sophia Institute Press. The name of the book is Guadalupe and the Flower World Prophecy. It comes to us from Joseph Julian Gonzalez and Monique Gonzalez. And it's a great new book that looks at some new theories related to what predated apparitions of Saint Juan Diego in the year 1531. We welcome to the program today Joseph and Monique.
Hello.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you on the show. And the name of the book is Guadalupe and the Flower World Prophecy. And, of course, all Catholics know what Guadalupe is referring to, those 1531 apparitions to St. Juan Diego that changed the Americas forever. And then we talk about the Flower World Prophecy, and nobody knows what that means. Tell us, when you wrote this book, what were you pointing to when you talk about the Flower World Prophecy?
Well, yes, thank you, Michael. Yeah, we believe that we're adding a lot to the story. You know, we kind of refer to it as the tip of the iceberg, that people tend to know about the Tilma, the Guadalupe story, the encounter in 1531, and of course they know about the millions of conversions that happened in the decade after that. But below the surface, the Tilma is the tip of the iceberg. Below the surface is a lot of information. Of course, a lot of people like yourself have well-documented information that would be on the Tilma itself. But actually, in our book, we deal very little with the Tilma. We actually break what we're talking about into two broad fields of study. One of them is Flower World, which deals with anthropology and archaeology, and the other one is Nahua philosophy. Now, Nahua were the name of the people that lived at the time of the Spanish arrival. So Flower World, the way that we like to explain this is to talk about the encounter, the narrative itself, and then we'll branch out from there. So Monique will give us a brief synopsis of the major point in the Guadalupe narrative. So go ahead, Monique.
Sure. We like to start with the narrative because in the very beginning, when Juan Diego's coming up on the hill as Tepeyac, he finds himself swept into this paradisal realm that's full of light and music. He's surrounded by the music and birds and color, and he's so startled by what he's experiencing that the very first thing that he says is, "Am I worthy of what I hear?" Which is a very important concept, worthiness, that will play out later on. But right after that, he says, "Could I be in the place my ancient ancestors spoke of, the flower world paradise in the land of heaven?" So with these words, he's tying what he just experienced to this ancient indigenous belief system. So very soon after that, he encounters a lady, a heavenly being, who identifies herself. And when she identifies herself, she not only says she's the mother of the one true God, but she also uses four terms or attributes that directly relate to the Nahua understanding of a one supreme God. And then very soon after that, she asks for a chapel to be built. And of course, he encounters all these obstacles and conflicts, including especially with the bishop, who specifically says that he wants a sign, he wants the proof. And we are all familiar with that. But what's interesting is how it plays out with Flower World is on the very last day when he's trying to avoid Guadalupe. He goes up on the east side of the hill at Tepeyac because it's a 14-mile walk, and he's going south. And he used to be on the west side, but on the last day he goes to the east side because his uncle is sick. He's trying to get a priest. But in the process of doing that, Mary, she finds him even though he's trying to go away. And she directs him to travel westward. This is a key point, which just we'll talk a little bit more about, and to travel westward up into the hill of Tepeyac, where he finds a multitude of precious, shining flowers with all the singing and everything that he experienced before. And he gets so excited, he starts gathering up these precious flowers in his tilma, and then he goes down the hill to share them with Bishop. And in the process of doing that, when he lets fall the flowers at the bishop's feet, the tilma that we now know about that is in Mexico City appears on his tilma. And so throughout the entire story, there's multiple indicators of this flower world paradise that have been discovered. Joseph, do you want to tag team
up
with that one?
So to tie it all together, the phrase that he uses in Nahua is Inchochi Tlalpan Intonacatlalpan. And this phrase is loaded. It actually is tying two different concepts, the flower world paradise, Xochi, meaning flower world paradise, and Tonacatlalpan. Now, this phrase ties directly to this concept that anthropologists and archaeologists are talking about these days, that from the very inception of Mesoamerican civilization, these ancient people had this concept, two primary concepts. One of them would have been the four-petal flower, and the second one would have been the flower world paradise, the exact same term that Juan Diego refers to. Now, the four-petal flower is essentially a connection between heaven and earth, and we can find that symbolism all throughout Mesoamerica. You see the four-petaled flower, you see cities that have this path of the sun, what we just referred to in east to west direction, and it was a way that man was trying to reach the transcendent, very much in the way in Platonic realism, if we get into that. But most people think of Mesoamerican man as polytheistic and, of course, of human sacrifice, and of course that did happen. But what we're saying in our book is that what undergrids all these concepts is this flower world concept. And to define it is basically that ancient Mesoamerican man had this obsession, if you will, to want to obtain this floral paradise that was filled with beauty and music. And you could see it all throughout Mesoamerica in the pyramids and pottery shards and murals in various depictions. And as it transcends, we're talking about 1500 BC, by the way. And as we see through the centuries, many of these concepts turn into flower song poems. And there's 180 known flower song poems that were collected by the Franciscan friars after the arrival of the Spanish. But this is part of their Nahua philosophy. And we can talk more about the flower songs poems, but basically the primary metaphor of these flower song poems is to gather flowers, is to call down the flowers from heaven, gather them in your tilma, and present these flowers or this truth, this transcendental connection to heaven, to disperse this information to the lords and princes. So gather, call down the flowers, gather them in your tilma, and show them to the lords and princes. So that's kind of in a nutshell the flower world prophecy.
Thank you for that. We're talking today with Joseph Julian Gonzalez and Monique Gonzalez, authors of the brand new book, Guadalupe and the Flower World Prophecy. And we look at the tilma, of course, we see various flowers on the dress, the mantle of Our Lady, including one flower above her womb, on her womb, the Nahuiolin, this four-petaled flower that you're referencing here. What would that have meant to the native people to see such flowers represented on the tilma of Our Lady of Guadalupe?
Well, the four-petaled flower is a representative of the Axis Mundi. So if you can imagine the four cardinal directions, north, south, east, and west, which represent the earthly plane, but emanating from the center point is a vertical point which reaches up to heaven. Of course, it also goes down into the underworld. But it's signifying that through beauty, we can make a connection to ultimate beauty or ultimate truth, which actually comes out later in these flower song poems. They actually say flowers are the only truth on earth. It actually states that in these song poems. So if you're looking at the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, you're seeing a four-petal flower over her womb. So if you can imagine something of a vertical point that is on its side now, which leads the one who is in front of the image of Guadalupe, leading them into ultimate truth, ultimate beauty. And as we like to say in our book, Jesus is the flower of truth, ultimately, because he, through his sacrifice, makes people worthy, would have made the Nahua people worthy to enter the flower world paradise. So it's a lasting sign on the tilma, this four-petaled flower.
And in addition to this flower, how can we see Our Lady of Guadalupe connected to these ancient traditions, or the larger, being part of a larger network of miraculous artistic expressions and ideas. How do we connect Our Lady of Guadalupe to this flower world?
Well, I think Monique can answer that. She already set up that Guadalupe was referred to in four different ways, but there's one way in particular that Our Lady of Guadalupe ties herself to ancient traditions. So go ahead and answer that, Monique.
Sure. Well, when I had mentioned before, when she identifies who she is, she says, "I am the mother of the one true God." And in Nahuatl, she says, "In Neli Teot Dios." That's how it says in the local Nahuatl language. But she also uses four attributes, one of which is very specifically referring to the God of far and near. She says, "I am the mother of Entloque Nahuake, the God of far and near." And one of the significances for this is that in the ancient song poem we briefly talked about, it specifically states that only the God of far and near can make one worthy of achieving this flower world paradise. So she herself is connecting herself to these ancient traditions, and also all throughout the account of the Nikamapoa in the native Nahuatl language, it's not just these two points. There's a multitude of phrases and terms that are directly tied to this flower world paradise. So throughout the book, you know, Guadalupe in the Flower World Paradise, Guadalupe in the Flower World Prophecy, we're breaking down multiple characteristics that are echoing and dovetailing between the ancient world and 1531. So what we're saying is that when the indigenous heard the story, they recognized all of these aspects because it was matching so closely what they already believed. And would account also for why, another thing we discussed in the book is about the missionary failure. And, you know, most of the indigenous were not converting. And Bishop Zumarraga does himself say that's a problem, and how can we overcome it? And even writes to the emperor in Spain saying, we might as well pack up and go home. So when Guadalupe appears and ties herself to this ancient indigenous system, we just see this fulfillment of 3,000 years of preparation that we believe happened in the Americas.
Right, Michael, and if I could just add one more point to it. You know, the flower song poems, not only does the singer desire to gather these flowers in his tilma, he wants to enter into the flower world paradise where these flowers of truth reside. But as the flower song poems go, the singer doesn't actually go to the flower world paradise. And therefore, the singer doesn't actually collect the flowers. And the reason stated, as Monique said, it was because he was not worthy, because he was with sin. And only the God of far and near can make one worthy to enter the flower world paradise and gather the flowers. And the exact same term in Tloka Nahuake is uttered by Our Lady Guadalupe as she being the mother of this attribute, the God of far and near.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Joseph Julian Gonzalez and Monique Gonzalez about the brand new book from Sophia Institute Press, Guadalupe and the Flower World Prophecy. And it seems to me, with going through all this archaeology and all the philosophical ramifications behind these songs that you've been listing out, we can look at the Guadalupe apparitions being sort of a culmination of thousands of years of preparation for the people of the Americas. What is your hope in presenting the case of the Flower World Prophecy?
Well, yes, you bring up a very good point. You know, we say that the Guadalupe narrative is part two, and Flower World and Nahua philosophy is part one of a great meta-narrative basically showing God's salvific plan for the Americas. So what we're hoping to do, one of the goals is to be able to show in detail the way in which God prepared the people of Mesoamerica down to so many different points that we can't even go into because we don't have the time right now, and all to lead Mesoamerican people to Jesus Christ. So our message is, why is that not happening today? If God was in control of history then, why is he not in control of history now? And even though we may be going through chaotic times and people are stressed out, they're worried, that to just fall back and know this was already preordained. God is in control of history, and through the Immaculate Heart of Mary, we will be taken care of. So that, I would say that that's probably an overriding message of our book.
And for people who want to pick up this book and perhaps find out more about you and your work, what's the best place that people can go?
Oh, sure. They can actually go to the Sophia Institute website and order the book on there as pre-order. It'll be available November 21st. And we are also developing a website that will go into even more details than what's in the book. And that's www.GuadalupeFlowerWorldProphecy.com.
Wonderful.
Right. It's also available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all your favorite booksellers.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Joseph Julian Gonzalez and Monique Gonzalez, for bringing forward this new book, Guadalupe and the Flower World Prophecy, out from Sophia Institute Books. Thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you so much for having us. God bless you.
God bless. And that was Joseph Julian Gonzalez and Monique Gonzalez. What a great conversation about Guadalupe and the Flower World Prophecy. Check that one out. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio and check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Raymond Arroyo, for his for talking to us about his brand new album, Merry and Bright and the Miracle of Christmas. And Joseph Julian Gonzalez and Monique Gonzalez, the authors of Guadalupe and the Flower World Prophecy. Check out Explore with the Miracle Hunter tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. I'll be going to the most visited Marian shrine in the world at Guadalupe in Mexico City. And we'll be there to investigate how the mysterious image emblazoned on St. Juan de Dios Tilma has inspired millions of believers. And check out my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's available from Tan Books. And you can go to EWTNRC.com. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.